Simon Crane, the stunt coordinator on it at the time, went round to Richard Whelan, who was the UPM, and he was like, they were arranged to go for dinner. He went, oh, no, come in first. I've got to finish watching this girl on Gladiators. She's hysterical and whatever. Like, they come in and watched, and then Simon went, oh, my God, she'd be a good double for Famke Janssen.
Yeah, wicked.
So that's the fine line of how you look and change in life.
And welcome to Cunning Stunts with myself, David Holmes. Ever since I was a teenager, I've been performing as a stuntman on feature films, and for 10 years I was the stunt double for Harry on the Harry Potter films. Whilst preparing a stunt for the final film in the series, I suffered a spinal injury that had the effect of paralysing me from the chest down and ending my career. However, in the decades since the accident, my love of stunts, the stunt performer community and movies has never wavered. So I'm starting this podcast to highlight and pay tribute to the amazing performers who make up the stunt community, giving you first-hand accounts of the work that goes into crafting some of the mind-blowing action scenes you've seen on films such as Star Wars, Mission Impossible, and The Avengers, while also revealing the grit, talent, and bravado of those that risk their lives in the name of entertainment. One quick note, the other voice you'll hear occasionally is Dan Radcliffe, one of my best friends and acting double on the Harry Potter films. He's been sitting in on some of these interviews. Okay, welcome back to this week's episode of Cunning Stunts, and today you're going to hear our interview with the super cool Eunice Huthart. Eunice has been involved in the film industry for over 24 years now. Her path into stunts and how I first heard of her was watching her compete and win the TV show Gladiators back in 1994. Eunice has gone from dodging the milkman, unable to pay him, to becoming Angelina Jolie's main stunt double and now a successful stunt coordinator. Her impressive credit lists include Fantastic Beasts, Pan, Maleficent, Dark Shadows, Salt, Bond movies, The Beach, and many, many more. In her interview, she tells us about joining the film industry, what it's like jumping from the top of a 78-foot waterfall, and how lying on your resume might not be a good idea, but very entertaining for the rest of the stunt crew. Quick note, there's a little swearing towards the end, so I apologise in advance, but here's our interview with Eunice. Hope you enjoy.
Cool. Do you mind introducing yourself and tell us how long you've been in the stunt industry?
Hi there, Eunice Huthart. Been involved in Spint's film industry now for 24 years? 24, I think, knocking on now. And, yeah, I'm always in the stunt role. I've, in one manner or another, very lucky. Always feature films, very little TV.
Yeah.
So
you're... it's a small introduction, really, but your real introduction, we know you from winning Gladiators.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously. What was the years that you was competing in that?
We filmed it in the summer of 94.
Yeah.
And then...
You were... I watched one of your things earlier
against Karen, was it?
Oh, yeah. Eliminator.
Yeah, it went close as well on the
trial. Yeah, it did go close.
Yeah, I was...
If I hadn't won that, I'd probably still be lying there now. Because, to be honest then, like my personality, particularly then, because my sort of sport was fighting, so my personality was just to win at all costs, no matter what. Like, I just wanted to win. I didn't want to... Like, second place would make me just cry like a baby. So,
yeah.
I mean, even if I'd played tiddlywinks with the daughter, I would have to win. Like, she'd go away crying. I'd be like, yeah, go on, won. So that was my mentality. So, and because I was fighting, I was very raw at the time. And, like, you know, what can I say? Like, I literally thought nothing of sort of fighting in that, which I did on one occasion.
Can you... touch on your fighting career. You competed?
Yeah, I sort of got into fighting.
Is this the route that took you to Gladiators?
Well, it sort of did, but it wasn't purposeful. When I was a kid, I wanted to fight. Because I was just a typical tomboy. I played football with the lads. I climbed trees, fell out trees, played war, you know. Cowboys and Indians, the usual thing that kids do. No one does it nowadays because no one lets the kids out, but we were out like... daylight hours, we'd be out just playing. And I wanted to fight, and my mum didn't want me to fight. She wanted me to be a ballet dancer.
Yeah.
which never ceases me.
Knowing you is a long way.
I know. She still doesn't quite understand me still to this day, which is terrible. But so our compromise was that I joined an athletics club. So I got quite a good career in the athletics. But as soon as I got to about 16, 17, I just chose to go down the fighting route then. Yeah. And, you know, martial arts as an art is really lovely. You know, there's disciplines, there's an art to it, there's katas, you know. I didn't care for any of it. All I wanted to do was fight. That's all I wanted to do.
Yeah.
And that was it. Like, so then, you know, I loved it. Getting beat up, fighting, scrapping. I loved it all. Like, there was nothing I didn't like.
What martial arts did you do? What was the...
We did the best way. What I discovered is you could do Taekwondo, which was really good because, like, it gives you good legs for kicking and stuff like that. But freestyle karate, which was like kickboxing, just gave me a lot more scope to fight every weekend, basically.
Yes.
If you did Taekwondo, you basically governed yourself just to that one discipline.
Right, okay.
But doing freestyle karate, so it was just kickboxing, it just enabled you to go to any tournament you wanted.
And if you were competing today, at this like in this time, would you be competing in MMA?
Oh, too right. Yeah, I get that jealous, you know.
Oh, I knew it.
I'm watching, I get Ronda so
Rousey,
jealous.
Would you turn her over?
Oh, mate, I'd love to. I'd love to have a bash at it. Me and the husband, right, we literally padded out the garage. So after Gladiators and when I could also afford a house with a garage, so to speak, we padded it all out and we just used to fight on the floor like MMA, brilliant. Fighting and holds and choke holds and everything. It was great. That's what we did all the time for about 15 years.
Yeah. Yeah, never get no visits from the police about domestic abuse.
I know, it was really funny. We used to we had got big 22-ounce gloves and we just used to punch crap out of
each
other.
I bet that's the best couples therapy.
I know. Brilliant.
So it's funny because in your career, in your stunt career, and we'll go back in the beginnings, but you had a very similar situation on Mr. and Mrs. Smith, where the fight in the house, couples fight.
Yeah.
You know, that's a brawl.
But it's funny you should mention that because I was just talking to the guys upstairs about it, but I sort of got so involved in that fight because it was like, I was like, this is what I do all the time. It's amazing. So Angie and Brad like just embraced it totally. And like, there's a lot of stuff that actually got sort of hit the cutting room floor just because of the length, or it might've been too violent. I'm not sure.
It's a great thing.
But we put a lot, and I got an MTV award just for that.
Brilliant.
Yeah, it was fun.
So go back to the start of your career. Now, is it true that after winning Gladiators, they called you for GoldenEye?
Yeah, so what happened is they'd only seen a few episodes, funny enough. And listen, I was like, I mean, I'd been to Spain once on holiday with me mates. Aside from that, I'd never been outside of Liverpool. I thought Liverpool was the centre of the universe. It still is. But I mean, I thought no one lived anywhere else. I thought everyone wants to live here. And why would you leave? And,
yeah.
And you know, I was just like a snotty-nosed kid still, really, to be honest, at the age I was. Because I sort of trained all my sort of youthful life. And then I met my husband straight away. So I wasn't a worldly kid, put it that way. So we did Gladiators. And I knew, I have to say, it wasn't a cocky confidence. I just knew I was going to win because I wasn't going to let anyone else beat me. I was that attitude. I was like, whoever the best is, I'll beat them because I ain't going to let no one beat me. And then I think two episodes had been out and they were looking for a stunt double for Famke Janssen on GoldenEye. And they needed a martial art background, the person. So they Simon Crane, the stunt coordinator on it at the time, went round to Richard Whelan, who was the UPM. And he was like, they were arranged to go for dinner. He went, oh, no, come in first. I've got to finish watching this girl on Gladiators. She's hysterical and whatever. Like, they come in and watched. And then Simon went, oh, my God, she'd be a good double for Famke Janssen.
Yeah, wicked.
So that's the fine line of how you look can change in life. So then Monday morning, Richard Whelan rang me up and he still gives me stick to this day. Yeah. So he rings me up and you know, I'm in this little house in Liverpool. I'm from the milkman because I can't even afford to pay for the milk. Like, I'm literally like, it's one of them. And I get this phone call and he's like, so, yeah, this is GoldenEye Productions. We'd like to, you know, invite you to an audition as the stunt double for Famke Janssen. So I was like, oh, wow, this is amazing. He goes, we have to tell you, though, the scene is in a sauna and you may be topless. So at that point, I'm like, oh, done it. And I thought it was me mate from where? Is that you got? I can't take the piss. I put the phone down. Anyway, he rings again. He does the same dialogue. And then I go, but it's still topless. He went, yeah, I have to say it's still topless. I went, which one of my mates is this? I still thought it was one of my mates winding me up. Put the phone down again. And he rang up again and he goes, I will not call you back if you hang up. This is the James Bond. And I just thought it was my mate saying to me. So it was still like the one of them. And then there was something in his voice that just became very serious. So I was like, okay. So anyway, cut a long story short, I go down for this audition. It leaves them. And sort of, I didn't really take it serious at that point. I was still focused on my fighting career. I still sort of, I just thought this was just something I was going to do for a couple of days and then that'd be it. And then we auditioned with a load of models, but literally all the models got sent away. I got to meet this guy comes up going, hello, darling, and gives me this kiss. And at first, because he lurched at me to give me a kiss, and I was a bit like, did that? And it was Martin Campbell, the director.
Oh, brilliant. Chinned off Martin.
No, I was literally, because he'd come so quick, he went, hello, darling, and then he'd come at me like that, and it was literally one of them
moments.
That's
brilliant.
That's great.
And even Simon Crane went, I thought he was going to hit the director, and I said, I didn't know he's director. And where I was from, no one did that. No one kissed like that.
So from that introduction, you've gone on to do your training.
Yeah.
Got qualified, got on the register.
Yeah.
And your career path and some of the films you've been involved in.
I know, it's mental, isn't it?
It's amazing.
No, literally, I pinch myself all the time.
Can you list some of them off? Or some of them off?
Yeah, so we did, luckily enough, like I mentioned them earlier, Simon Crane, he took me with him and he went on to do all the big movies. So that helped with Bond films, Tomb Raider 1, Tomb Raider 2, Titanic, Mr. and Mrs. Smith. And it just went on. There's a few Bonds, Salt.
That was some amazing stuff on that.
That was good fun. I think if Simon, the thing about Simon is he's taught me to push boundaries and never repeat. You need to progress. If you don't progress, you're just going to do the same style stuff everyone does. So we're constantly always striving to do something new. And and then as a stunt coordinator, I went on to do Dark Shadows. Heart of the Sea, Pan, Maleficent, Fantastic Beasts, King Arthur.
There's some infamous stunt stories about you.
Oh, really?
Really hard.
I don't know if I even want to hear this, how bad or good
it is. Can you talk about, firstly, the beach and the jump off the beach?
Oh, yeah.
Because that's a long way down.
Yeah.
And I do believe, did you not just go, I'm going before you boys?
Well, no, in the story it was that. It wasn't really like that. But what happened with the beach was there was a recce. So basically on the film, a recce takes place. Well, you know, but for anyone else who doesn't, there's a recce that takes place and they go out and they say, yeah, this can happen, that can happen. But when they went to the beach waterfall, the rainfall had been really high. So there was enough water, like, to even if you just jumped off the edge and just literally stood off and just stepped off, and when there was enough water where you were safe, by the time we come to shoot it, there was only a foot of water for 33 feet out, and then it was solid rock. So you had to, when you leapt off, you had to go 33 feet out.
That's a big,
and it was
over how high?
At that point, it was about 78 feet.
That's a long time.
So they got, what they did,
Lauren,
is...
That's long.
Well, they got mathematicians, and the mathematicians said, you can't do it. They said, you know, the projective way that you'd go for the speed you could create on that. We had about, I think, 14 feet or 15 feet run up. So it was basically a few steps, really, when you go. So that's where I think the story come, because we were like, let's just have a go. Come on, boys, let's just do it. So and we weren't going to even take, if we were going to jump it, you may as well have shot it. So we all just waited for the day and we just went. But I did go first, but only because that's how we were going to shoot it. It wasn't through me being, I'd like that to be the story.
Don't worry, it is the story.
So it literally was like that.
So that's interesting. Yeah, I was going to ask, because it is such a... when you have those moments, like, what is it about it that, like, you love it? And clearly you are someone that needs a challenge and needs to be doing something.
Yeah, I need it. It's like I can't explain it. Like, my husband used to say to me, I know when you've done a gnarly stunt in work, because the whole weekend, it's like I'm on a high the whole weekend. Because I live in Liverpool, so every weekend I'd come home. And I didn't really talk about work as much when I'd get home, because I would like to leave it behind. But he used to go, oh, you did something big and gnarly, because I'd literally just be buzzing.
Yeah, the drive home after a job.
Yeah.
Brilliant, isn't it?
It's great. And I don't, I'd love to know, like, where that comes from. I don't know if it's just a personality trait or the fact that, because if you talk to a lot of stunt people, a lot of stunt people are sort of failed athletes. Like, I never got my world title in my fighting career. I got the world bronze and I was European champion, and I just, our gym was full of world champions and I never got world champion.
It also says a lot about you that you consider that a failure.
It is a failure in my life.
Right, because that's like, because you just said you
never got to,
like,
the Olympics as a gymnast.
So I know, so it tortures you a bit though, doesn't it?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. I watch it now, you know, and it's just, it's ridiculous to see it, like. Just, you get a bit jealous, you know?
I do. I still get jealous.
Yeah.
So I think it's, maybe we're just trying to satisfy that. I don't know.
So, talk about some specific stunts. Because you've had some hits.
I mean, I've been in the cinema and there's been a couple of hits, like throughout Tomb Raider. We had a lot of good gnarly hits. And on Salt, there was a couple of good gags when we were... jumping from truck to truck.
Yeah.
And when you're in the cinema and you hear someone go, like, hey, nice one. Well, you know, it's great. That's the best thing.
Do you find yourself, go on, get it. Go on, for, like, when you're watching it as well.
Still. You find that you're like that all the time. Yeah, it's great. Like. Yeah.
And you built a great relationship with Angelina Jolie, didn't you?
Yeah, yeah. She's a great friend, I have to say. She's really, really lovely. A great parent and everything. Yeah, she's great. Yeah.
Good. And... you know, she happily for you to push down boundaries and involve them in the films. You know, if you're going to go for something big, she will negotiate to be involved within the script.
True. Well, sometimes we literally have to go, Angie, you literally can't do this gag. Yeah. Like, because she's game for it. She's a very physical person. Like, we're trained to be physical and she's not. So for the person who's not in that trained to be physical, she's actually very, very able. So no, she's great. Sometimes she'd stay behind like 2 hours just to watch the stunts and watch what I was doing.
Cool.
And pat me on the back and that's great.
Nice.
Growing up, were you a fan of action movies? Were there some favourite? Was there anything?
I fell in love with movies. So I did, like, everyone did the Bruce Lee thing. Everyone like put little notches on the door to see how high you could pick up and see how hard you could punch your little brother type of thing. So I think everyone did that, but I remember watching King Kong, the original King Kong, and I remember crying my eyes out, and I remember just as a kid thinking, wow, this film just like reached right down there and ripped my heart out. And it was the first time I ever felt that from just watching something. And I'll never forget the feeling to this day.
Yeah. You really love the film game, didn't you?
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, I really love it.
I love it. Absolutely love it.
There's nothing that I'm... like. First day stepping on the film set.
Yeah, it's great.
The smell hits you.
Yeah, like, everything. I like the teamwork and I like the filmmaking of it as well as the end product. But I'm like, even though I do stunts, I am a fan of film. So, like, it can be any film for me, really. Yeah. Like, if I'm entertained and I feel for the characters, then I'm sold. And, you know, I can be sold on cartoons. I know everyone can, but I can be sold on everything.
I can be sold on cartoons very easily. And what about as a coordinator, like, how do you, like, do you feel that, like, the pressure when, you know, when you've got someone who's doing a stunt, and obviously that you would never ask them to do anything that you wouldn't do yourself or wouldn't have been comfortable with, but do you, you know, do what's, you know, is it like you're doing it yourself at that point, basically?
Always. I start pacing up and down. I always look at Mark Mayer. He's sort of one of my key guys, and he's always a great filter for me.
I was going to mention Mark earlier, because I think you understand the importance of a great team.
Yeah.
And he's amazing, isn't he?
He's amazing.
He's just like one of the most talented human beings. Yeah. And calm and good person to be around. And in a high-pressure environment, I don't think there's anyone better for you.
No, I know. Like, I literally, like I'll look for him and I'll see him, and then we'll have a bit of eye contact, and I'll be like, And he'd be like, you know, just, I think it's just knowing that someone else on set understands what I'm thinking and they know how to diffuse it. And because it's always fine, like the boys we have, the team we have, like I still say we've got, I mean, other people argue, but I think the stunt team we've got at the moment are the best stunt team. We achieve whatever gets asked of us every time. And, you know, we push the boundaries because we want the actor to do as much as possible.
Yeah.
So yeah, so just having that understanding really, because I can't be next to the director going, oh well, whatever. You know, I can't be like that. But I can look at Mark and go, please tell me this is gonna go great. Yeah. And he does, so it's great, like.
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah, so Scouse are born and bred, but the industry's taking you everywhere.
Yeah.
And some of the best locations you worked in, some of the nicest places.
God, funny enough, at first, I think if I'm brutally honest, it's a progression, you know. I got in this industry, like I was 28 when I got in the industry, and I think I was a baby still. I wasn't worldly, so I wasn't that comfortable in my own skin. So when we'd go to a location and I'd be on my own, I would just sit in a room upset because I was missing my family. Yeah. So I'd be in the most amazing Los Angeles and Seattle and Vancouver, Thailand, Australia.
Yeah.
I'd be everywhere and I'd miss my family. Now that I've got progressed a bit older and I'm a bit more comfortable in my own skin, it's a little bit different now.
Thank you for sharing that vulnerability.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I get that. I understand that.
Yeah.
You're a strong, capable woman, successful.
Oh, mate, I used to cry my eyes out. I'd cry myself to sleep, but the day I knew I can't give up, and whether that was the right answer or the wrong answer at the time, I can't give up or walk away from anything.
And it's people like you that just keep flying the flag for the best stunt people
in the world. No, thank you. I just think I'm dead lucky.
Can I ask you about any injuries you might have got? Like, everyone feels...
You've been smashed about.
Yeah, no, I've been smashed about.
To go on, use them off.
I remember I've got a metal hip now. I set the bleepers off every time I go through the airport control. God, I remember once I had to go and get something done. This physio, he goes, well, so what injuries you've got? And he literally had to turn over the page because we were listing, like, broken feet, broken ankle, broken shin. On my left knee, 2 snap cruciates, and then a rebuild on that. Hip replacement. Broken ribs, broke coccyx, broken cheekbone, fractured skull. And I've got away with it each time. But yeah, I get out of bed, something always aches.
Yeah. God,
don't you
hate damp days.
Yeah, the damp days. I think when I'm a pensioner, I'll be living in the warm. There's no doubt.
You'll be both.
Yeah,
be neighbours.
Yeah, but I think it comes with the territory, unfortunately. You just keep your fingers crossed.
I always say I was a stuntman.
Yeah.
You know, like, I shouldn't have been there taking the money if I didn't understand that there are risks involved in the job that we do.
Yeah.
We are, you know, that's part of it, and you accept that when you turn up at work.
Yeah, you do. You know,
that we've asked everyone, is there a stunt you've said no to?
No. Eunice, do you ride horses? Of course I ride horses. I've never on a horse in my life. I remember once I got this phone call to go to Edinburgh. This was a disaster life. So they were like, hey, Eunice, how tall are you? So I'm like, how tall do I have to be? And they're like, we need you to double sporty spice. I went, yeah, I'm exactly the same height. She's like about 5'4". And I'm like 5'8". So anyway, they're like, do you abseil? Yeah, of course I abseil. So then obviously I don't abseil. So we go up. I go to this rock climbing wall, do a little bit of abseiling, cocky me as usual, do it once. Yeah, it's fine, mate, don't worry. We go up to this thing, and it was in Edinburgh, and it was the new Virgin store opening in Edinburgh or something. Yeah. We had to abseil down this like 80-foot building.
Dressed as Sporty Spice.
What they did is we dressed as a ninja with a hood, and then Sporty Spice was under the stage, and she come up and pulled the hood off.
Okay.
And then Gabe Cronley, another stunt guy, was doubling Richard Branson.
Yeah.
So we're coming down. Anyway, my t-shirt, because Gabe kept saying, because he was an abseiler, like a rock climber guy. He went, you're going too far. I'll do. Like, I'm like, that old dead cocky, right? My t-shirt that I was wearing got jammed up in the figure of eight we were in. I was hanging upside down. All these people like, ah! They're like, Richard Branson's abseiling down, that he's in this Sporty Spice, hanging upside down at the top. And then I had to lift myself up, get that out, dangle back down, because I was in a bit of slack. It was a disaster. Sporty's like, yeah, you made me look like a numpty Eunice. I was like, oh, I'm so sorry. But I still would never have said no to it.
Yeah, standard.
Brilliant. how, so other than Andy, who's like some really capable, like, have there been any like actors that you've gone like, oh, you can actually, you're quite good at this?
Oh yeah, God, Hugh Jackman tops the lot. He's amazing.
Sweet, his physical capability.
He's amazing. And he's willing to work. I mean, he would ring me up and go, right, Eunice, I've got an hour free. Where are you? I'd be like, it's 8 o'clock at night, mate. We've all gone.
Yeah, yeah.
He's like, oh, all right, I'll catch you tomorrow then. He is like a grafter. He's great. So Hugh Jackman,
that's cool,
was amazing.
You're now in a position, you're on large jobs, so there's a time pressure on the production.
Yeah.
You know, that's like, you know, are you going to keep the set waiting and does that sometimes
the most intimidating part of my job role at the moment is that there's a fine line between like committing to something. It's knowing that balance, because the last thing you ever want to do is be the department that's keeping the whole film unit waiting.
Yeah.
So there's a fine balance with saying yes, we can do it, but you've got to wait an hour and a half. Yeah. Or no, we can do it right now, and then it failing, and then you've wasted an hour and a half trying to do it.
Yeah.
So that's why it's very important you get a good rapport with the director. That's one thing I've learned. I have to get a good relationship with my director, because then I'll go, look, Dave, honestly, I can see physically we're not going to get it here. I'm really sorry. Our bad. Give us an hour. Don't shoot that. We'll come back and we'll have it nailed for you.
Yeah.
So that's what I've learned is the best approach. But at first, yeah, of course, I've made the wrong decisions, and I've had the producers haul me in the office and give me a proper bollocking, and probably rightly deserved on the occasions, yeah.
I've had plenty of bollockings myself as
well,
but don't worry about that. Everyone needs a bollocking now.
Everyone needs a bollocking, it's fine.
You're a big cheese,
Eunice. Oh, no, I literally just see myself as a Liverpool gobshite that got told, like, literally, when I went in, my careers teacher came in. And at the time, I did think I was still going to play football for Liverpool. Yeah. I was 15, and they're like, what do you want to do? I said, oh, I'm going to play football for Liverpool. They went, well, that's not going to happen, and you need to change your accent if you want to get anywhere in life. So it's quite good for a snotty-nosed little kid to be where I am, but
mate,
I'm holding on. I'm not letting go.
Well, no, I think you've been one of the imagination.
No, thank you. It was really nice.
No.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks again to everybody tuning in to listen to this episode of Cunning Stunts, and thanks to my guest, Eunice Huthart. On a personal note, I just want to say thank you to all of my guests. Thank you to everybody that's tuned in to listen to our interviews, and thank you, most importantly, to the crew that have helped me get here. Hope you've enjoyed this journey of Cunning Stunts this year. We will be back in the new year for more episodes. Until then, Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Ripple Production podcast series produced by myself, David Holmes, and Amy Stairs. Sound recording, editor, and music by Joe Lamb. To find out more about us, please visit our website, www.rippleproductions.co.uk, or follow us on Facebook and Instagram.